Jason, the combine is wrapping up. We'll break down what we've heard and what we think the Bears may do going forward, coming up on Halas Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, as you and I sit here on a Friday at the NFL Combine, my question, I guess, for you is whether you've had a St. Elmo's shrimp cocktail yet.
I have not, no. This will probably be the first combine I've been to where I haven't even stopped by there.
Do you like them?
I like the shrimp. I'm not big on the cocktail sauce.
I'm not sure that I like it, but when I go, I get it.
It's tradition.
Kind of a win in Rome situation.
Yeah, it's tradition, yeah.
And that's the only time that Rome and Indianapolis will be put in the same sentence, just so we're clear. The Bears are staring down a pretty hard deadline here at the start of the league season on March 11th to not only get under the cap, but probably to do some fairly heavy lifting for a team that seems, you know, on the verge of something pretty good. They still need to make sure that they walk that fine line, I guess, between going for it and being responsible for the next 5 years. Tremaine Edmonds, their starting linebacker, has been allowed to seek a trade. What do you make of that?
Well, let's talk big picture there.
Okay.
Because you kind of started with that. Our friend Herb Howard from the Bigs described this offseason as the Bears having first world problems.
Right.
Which is great, because they've gone into other offseasons, Patrick, very recently, saying, there's nobody at this position, or there's only one cornerback and you need, you know, three or four. They are now looking where they do have to fill some starting jobs, but they could trot out a decent team right now if you were to re-sign Kevin Byard, for example. I mean, you'd have guys at all these positions, but when you talk about trying to be a contender, and whether you go all in for that now and kind of deal with the consequences as you go, there does need to be some responsibility long term. And when you look at the way things ended with Ryan Pace is going all in for a team that is going 8-8, 8-8, 6-11. He gets fired. They've got no draft capital. Even if he hadn't gotten fired, they'd have no draft capital and a salary cap nightmare. I mean, it would have been a burn down year if he had stayed. Either way, they were going to be in a total teardown and rebuild at the end of the 2021 season. Ryan Poles wants to never be in that position. And one way that you avoid ever being in that position is you figure out quarterback. Like the Chiefs, no matter how many things they have to figure out at other positions, are never just going to be garbage as long as Patrick Mahomes is healthy and, you know, still in his 30s or whatever. That's where the Bears hope to be with Caleb Williams. But I would challenge the idea of being overly focused on long-term prudence with how much closer do you need to be to say we're going for it than you go 11-6 last year, win the division, and you are betting as an organization on a major step forward by Caleb Williams under Ben Johnson next season. And quite frankly, if you're wrong about that, you're wrong about everything anyway. So this, I wouldn't hold it against them for going all in right now, because this you're kind of at that stage where it's the time to do it. The next step from where they were in 2025 is to be a legitimate contender in 2026.
This is a team that now has won one playoff game in the last 15 years. I think that if I were running them, and I do think this is the way they look at it, I think you want to be, you mentioned the Chiefs, but to a lesser extent, you want to be the Bills. You want to be the Packers. These teams that make the playoffs every year. Well, the Packers made the playoffs, what, 6 years in a row, something like that?
And beyond that, are considered, those two teams that you mentioned are generally considered contenders every
right.
year.
Right, and I think if you want to build one of those teams where you know you're going to be consistent enough to make the playoffs frequently, and hopefully you jump up and get somebody, or jump up and win a couple of games, you know, while you're in the playoffs, I think that would be the argument for not trading everything you've got for Max Crosby. Would be if we want to be consistent for the next 5 years. I don't know whether that's exactly what the Bears want. I think that that's the formula. I don't think it's, well, we don't think we're close, so we're not going to try. It's, you know, we would rather be at a high level for as long as possible rather than maybe a spike. And then, you know, like you said, the inevitable salary cap issues and draft pick problems that comes with selling out for a good player.
Yeah, but to win, to have sustained winning, you have to actually do some winning.
Sure.
And this is, and Ryan Poles has talked all along through his tenure about sustainability, but last year was the first year there was anything really worth sustaining. Mm-hmm. Last year was the first even decent season that they'd had under him. So you gotta get there first. They're still on the climb up to me. And I think that 11-6 with the division looking pretty wide open and you're banking on a big step forward from Caleb. And by the way, Pat, the other half of this, the bookend to this is on the front end, we're talking about how much progress they've made and what the launch point is based on last season. On the back end, you have two more seasons where you're getting discounted quarterback play. Mm-hmm. And no matter how much Ryan Poles will try to downplay the pressure that creates, it creates a lot of pressure. That is the window. You have this four-year window where Caleb Williams is making $10 million a year. Trevor Lawrence is making, I think, $55 million a year. By the time Caleb Williams is up for an extension a year from now, the going rate for him is probably going to be a five-year, $300 million contract. You don't have to be better than the other quarterbacks to get paid more than them. It's just inflation. That's why Patrick Mahomes makes, you know, the 10th most or something like that salary-wise. It's just who's next for their deal is going to get all that money. And it's going to be like $60 million a year for quarterbacks by the time Caleb and the rest of his class, Drake May and Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix, come up for their deals.
Which, by the way, great. Nobody's complaining.
First world problem,
right?
As Herb Howard would say.
Well,
but you've got two more years where you're hopefully getting $60 million quality at quarterback for the low price, the discounted price of $10 million a year. When you have that extra 50 to play with, you've got to spend it well and you've got to go for it.
Tremaine Edmonds, I think, he's not going to play another down for them. I don't think they're going to be able to trade him. Cutting him will save $15 million. Then you have to go find a new Tremaine Edmonds. And I think in Dennis Allen's scheme, I don't think linebacker is as important as it was in Matt Eberflus's Tampa 2 sort of scheme. But you got to go find a starter, and I find it hard to believe that they'll cheap out and just re-sign DeMarco Jackson and call him a starter, right? So you need someone there. You mentioned Kevin Byard. You're probably going to need one safety, if not two, depending on whether Kevin Byard wants to come back. If Nashawn Wright decides to go somewhere else, you're probably going to need another corner, unless you like Tyreek Stevenson and Terrell Smith to fight it out on the outside. And then at defensive line, you know, we've talked about this before, but you're going to need one pass rusher on the outside and maybe one on the inside. Those are a lot of needs. And regardless of whether they quote-unquote go for it or not, they've got a lot of work to do just to kind of get back to where their roster was, you know, on the last play of the playoff game, right?
Yeah, let's talk about needs versus resources mm-hmm. for this offseason. So let's assume a bunch of the things you just said, because I think they're all pretty likely. I think it's pretty likely that Kevin Byard re-signs. I think it's extremely likely, basically a given at this point, that Tremaine Edmonds is out. And I think it's very likely that Nashawn Wright leaves for a payday, which good for him because the guy's been making nothing by NFL standards, and now he's got the chance to cash in. And then you don't have a left tackle because Ozzie Trapillo is going to be out for most or all of next season. So there's four jobs that have to be filled. And right now you've got no cap space and two draft picks that you could expect to be starters. A first and a second round pick. So you either have to increase your resources or have answers for those needs in-house or settle. And I don't think settle is what they want to do right now. I don't think Ben Johnson took the job to settle. I don't think he took the job to say, 11-6, we won a playoff game, we beat Green Bay, everybody's happy. You know, look, cool. He has been really clear repeatedly that is not success. That is only success in the Bears world where they've been a disaster for so long.
But the question isn't...
Big picture, that's not why you play.
But the question isn't how bad do they want it. The question is, what are they willing to do to get there? They can make a lot of cap room right now if they want to restructure veteran contracts. Doing that makes those contracts much worse in the future.
When you'll be paying Caleb Williams.
When you'll be paying Caleb theoretically. Williams. So do you want to do that or not? I think if you decide you don't want to do that, I don't think it means you don't care or you're not going for it. It means that you're trying to be as prudent as possible. You talk about, you know, are you going to settle? Could I interest you in Braxton Jones for 1 year?
No.
Why not?
No. And throw anybody else's name in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, ask me Theo Benedet or Karan Amagaji, and my answer is definitely no still. Look back to the last time they didn't have a left tackle. That was their playoff game against the Rams. They had no confidence whatsoever in playing Braxton Jones at that spot. No confidence whatsoever in playing Theo Benedet. And nobody knows, including the Bears right now, whether Karan Amagaji is an NFL player at all.
Right.
Maybe he will be. He was a third-round pick. He's been hurt a lot. Maybe he develops into a backup or a starter or something or a guard or whatever. But the last time that they were in the situation that they will now be in for the entire 2026 season, probably, they moved Joe Tooney out to left tackle. And they've said they're not going to do that other than in a pinch. So, no is the answer on Braxton Jones for me.
Okay, quick follow-up. He was hurt going into training camp, got his strength up enough, then got hurt again. He's made 44 career starts. This isn't Theo Benedet, a guy who played in the, you know, Canadian college football. You don't think there's a world where, with a full off season of health, with a chance to strengthen his lower body, which he was going to do last year, until he got hurt, which essentially made him stay off his feet all offseason. You don't think that he could be playable at least until Ozzie Tripillo comes back?
He's cheap.
Yeah.
He's going to be cheap. No, I don't think he is. I think when you say 44 starts, I think that is, I think there's an asterisk on that. I don't think he's making those 44 starts on a different team.
And
he came in at ground zero on the rebuild, and you know, it was a good find. Mm-hmm. It's good that you found even a backup left tackle in the fifth round out of Southern Utah. But I don't think that he's an NFL starter. And this gets back to part of what I'm talking about settling or not, is we listed out these needs that they've got to fill regardless. And I think they could probably fill the ones that we listed off, you know, safety, the linebacker spot with Tremaine Edmonds, maybe the third corner spot, maybe the left tackle. They could probably do that without wrecking their cap. They can probably do that between some restructuring, letting Tremaine Edmonds leave, and using those two draft picks. They can probably fill back out to the same level of talent that they were at last year. I don't know that you want to settle for that, because I think what Ben Johnson is pushing for is hard grading on positions that are quote-unquote solved, like defensive tackle, defensive end, possibly even running back. I know that Kyle Menungai is, this was a very celebrated rookie season for him, as it should have been, a seventh-round pick. I don't think they're sitting there saying, we're good to go with Swift and Menungai. I think they would look at upgrades if, you know, somebody like David Montgomery was available affordably. Would you rather have him and Swift? Probably. Things like that. You don't. I know you're wincing at that because you love Kyle Menungai, but you get the concept of what I'm saying overall of looking at positions. Oh, we're good at this position, but do we just want to have a good season, or are we going for a great season? If you're going for a great season, you need to look at upgrading over good players. You need to say there's a good player here, but could we get a great player here? And one of the things they're looking at, let's talk about the defensive line for a minute. You mentioned Max Crosby, probably available for a trade no matter what the Raiders are saying, because they're in a burn down. They need the picks. And they could probably get, what? Do you think they get two firsts for Max Crosby? And then you got to take on his money. That, man, two firsts is a tough ask for the Bears. You got Trey Hendrickson available in free agency. You've got a name that I love for them, Khalil Mack, available in free agency. I don't know if you can get him on a one-year deal or not, maybe like 1 year, $20 million or something like that. I think that Ryan Poles is going to want to say that the answer is Shamar Turner. I think there is some acceptance that it's not Dio, that they know that that isn't – Dio Odengbo didn't turn out to be who they needed him to be at that salary, and they've still got him for one more year before they have an escape in that contract. I think they're going to want to say that it's Shamar Turner, the second-round pick from last year, who missed a lot of the season with an injury, with multiple injuries, actually.
Trey Hendrickson, before he was with the Bengals, was drafted and developed by the New Orleans Saints.
Saints, I think, right?
His defensive coordinator there was?
Dennis Allen.
I think we've harped in print and here on defensive line. The reason is that in pass rush win rate, which measures how quickly you beat your guy in 2.5 seconds, the Bears were the second worst team in football last year. And they can sit there and tell us that they believe in Austin Booker and that they believe in Shamar Turner, and that maybe Dio comes back and can help them from both the inside and the outside. But I think that they know that that is something they need to add players for. Ben Johnson said, to get where we need to go, we need to rush the passer better. And I don't think the Bears are foolish enough to look at what they have on their roster and just plan on everybody getting a little bit better, and that'll be good enough.
It's been a problem. The entire Ryan Poles era, they have struggled at that position. And they finally got to, at the defensive line, and they finally got to a point where they sunk premium resources into premium positions there, but they've gotten it wrong. I'm not willing to say they've gotten it wrong on Montez Sweat. I think he is good enough to be your lead pass rusher, but you've got to have a second guy on the other side. And talking about Austin Booker, that kind of feels like Ryan Pace talk to me, like looking at guys that are these kind of late round picks in development for years and years and years, and talking about how this guy, that we can count on this. You don't know that you can count on that.
I think he's a situational pass rusher.
Yeah. But they've spent their premium resources on guys that just quite frankly haven't been good enough, whether it's the money they put into Grady Jarrett at defensive tackle last year or the money they put into Dio Odengbo at defensive end, maybe now a little bit of defensive tackle going forward, and the second-round pick in Jervon Dexter. I think those are all guys you look at and say, you look at Jervon Dexter, for example, and you say, he's good. Jervon Dexter is good. He's not great. He's not a game-changer for them in the middle of their defensive line, and you need that. It would be totally conceivable that they would look at a position like that, like Jervon Dexter himself, since they can't get out of the Jarrett contract this year, and say, we need to have a better player than that, and draft somebody like that in the first round that kind of forces Jervon out.
What would you want in a trade for Jervon Dexter? For 1 year of Jervon Dexter, he's entering his final season.
I don't even know what the going rate for that would be. I don't think it's a second-round pick on him. I mean,
I think it's a four, probably. Is that, I mean, at that point, would you rather have the four? It's like the
Tyson. You might just rather have the depth.
Yeah, it's like the Tyson Bagent argument is, how much do they have to give you back for your team to be better than it was when you had Tyson Bagent on it?
Right.
And the answer is, they probably won't give it to you unless they're absolutely desperate.
Yeah.
And you know, I get back to that too, which is, let's say it's an offer of a third round pick. I think I'd rather have Tyson Bagent. Wouldn't you?
Oh, out of those options, yes, because, I mean, what are you going to do for a backup quarterback?
Go pay somebody more than you're paying Tyson Bagent.
Yeah, all the reasons why people will want Tyson Bagent are reasons why you should keep Tyson Bagent.
Right.
Because he's someone with high potential who is on a very affordable contract for two more years.
Right.
I mean, that's a really good insurance plan. And I don't think that they, for Caleb Williams, and I don't think that the Bears are going to say, you know, Tyson's paid his dues. Arizona or Miami or, you know, name six other teams are looking for a starter. Let's send Tyson somewhere where he's going to get a chance to start. No, not unless they're sending you a second-round pick.
No, and they're not in the business of developing players and then trading them to other people to make them better. Like, this isn't a charity here. And you can sit there and say, we want Tyson to be a starter. Cool. You're also paying him a lot of money to be your backup, or a lot of money for a backup quarterback. and you should probably.
I'm looking to cash in on the Tyson Bajan investment a year from now.
Is there a 5% chance that you want to keep Tyson around just in case? I think you and I both think that Caleb Williams is the answer and is going to get a second contract. But is there a, would you like him around on the 5% chance that something goes completely sideways this year?
Not in terms of Caleb's play, just in terms of Caleb's health.
Okay. Yeah, that's
which hasn't been an issue to date. At some point, you want to cash in on the Tyson Bagent investment. You want to flip an undrafted pick for what becomes a, you know, in theory, it's a second-round pick. That's what teams are trading for a starter, for someone that they are planning to have as a starter. Maybe it ends up being a third. I take that deal a year from now, going into the last year of Tyson Bagent's contract, because you want to get something out of that investment, and Tyson Bagent definitely wouldn't stick around for a second contract to be a backup.
But if you get 5 years of a backup quarterback and all you did was invest an undrafted free agent salary and then gave him a 2-year, $9 million,
very modest deal,
or $11 million extension, you've already won. Whether you can flip that into future stuff or not, I think they've all they've already won. The Bears have got, what, 2.5 weeks or so until the league season starts. I think we would expect Tremaine Edmonds to probably get cut between now and then. Do you expect – what other things do you think that they will do in the lead-up to free agency?
I think it's going to have to be – all of it is – just depends on what other moves they can make. Mm-hmm. I don't think in a vacuum that they can or that they will or should trade DJ Moore. But if you end up in a situation where trading DJ Moore – is part of how you make Max Crosby work,
right,
or, you know, even Khalil Mack work or something like that, money-wise, I can understand why they would want to do that and why Ben Johnson would say, I can turn somebody else into the receiver we need and Rome can be the number one and things like that. Same thing with Swift and Komet. Swift and Komet both have easy outs on their contract right now. And Ryan Poles said just this week that he is feeling, quote, pretty good about both those guys being back. But he didn't say it concretely. He left the door open.
Yeah, in Ryan Poles' speak, though, that's about as firm as he's going to get.
Pat, in the same answer, he left it open, saying the combine is when opportunities start to come up.
Right.
And that's when, you know, that's why he left things slightly gray on those two guys rather than saying we're keeping those guys, because those are positions where other positions where Ben Johnson could be sitting here saying, I really like this running back in the third or fourth round, and I really like Menungai, or we've got a chance to bring in David Montgomery cheaper than Swift or something like that, or Ben Johnson will believe that he can turn lesser running backs and wide receivers into better running backs and wide receivers, so he might have the thought of, we could spare some at this position in order to help a position like defensive end.
Can I give you a quick aside on Kyle Menungai?
Please.
Just because I can't let it go.
Yes.
I think he's the perfect guy to have on your team, given your cap situation. If you have a useful player who's making a seventh-round pick salary for the next 3 years, I think there's value to that. And I think that I would be surprised if they sat there and said, we'd rather pay David Montgomery $6 million a year. Because like you said, that I think the opportunity cost there is that's money that should go to the other side of the ball, probably.
Yeah, I agree with you. My point in that is I think if of all the all the needs they have, I'm not super concerned about running back. I think that worked really well last year. I mean, they were they were top five in rushing last year.
They were two for the longest
time. Yeah. So I'm not super worried about that. But my point in even bringing up running back, for example, is they've got to be ruthlessly tough graders if they want to be a contender.
We got about 5 minutes left here, Jason. Real quick, you saw Fernando Mendoza, the Indiana quarterback, today. What was he like?
He is just, I mean, Fernando Mendoza has got, what are we in? End of February? He's got like 6 or 7 more months of being this just happy-go-lucky darling of the football world before the lights come on and the pressure really kicks in. And I hope he's ready for that I hope he is prepared for the pressure that's going to come with that. The good thing for him is he's going to the Raiders, so, you know, it won't be quite the pressure it would be in New York or Chicago or some other places where there's bigger media markets. But it's been this just darling Cinderella college career for him, winning the Heisman, and now he's probably going to be the number one overall pick. And then he's going to go to the Raiders, who have been bad for a long time and will be counting on this kid to change everything about them. Sound familiar, Caleb Williams?
Right.
Like, that's what it becomes, is now you have to redirect a franchise, not just figure out your own situation and learn how to play in the league. Like, everything will be riding on you. And in his case, talk about tough graders. Tom Brady is the guy watching to see if you're going to turn things around.
Tom Brady called into their meeting. He wasn't here, right? Wasn't that what he said?
I didn't catch that part on Friday.
I believe that's what he said. I spent yesterday at the Indiana State Capitol building where...
Just taking a tour or what?
No, they let me hang out. Indiana State Senate voted 45-4 with one person who wasn't there to pass along the stadium bill. We were wondering if the governor would sign it on Friday. Instead, he signed it less than an hour after they passed it on Thursday afternoon. So they're good. They are now just waiting for the Bears to make a decision. Sounds like that probably isn't going to be anytime soon because the Illinois state legislature is working on it. But they now have a two-week break before they come back and talk more seriously about the mega projects bill that would allow the Bears to pay less in property taxes on their stadium than the law mandates right now. What's your vibe from talking to people here?
Well, from that and from reading what you reported on it on Thursday, I didn't find it surprising whatsoever that Indiana passed the legislation to give the Bears what they want. The Bears' statement in response to that, I thought was pretty interesting in the fact that it was very uninteresting. The statement was not, okay, we're sending you know, a construction crew to the site first thing Monday morning. No, it was more along the lines of what?
Cool. No, it was, I mean, you.
It was like, we appreciate this,
And here's the thing.
Totally non-committal.
The state of Indiana had wanted the Bears to give a commitment, to give everybody political cover for doing this, essentially. Mm-hmm. And the Bears didn't go that far. They didn't go that far last week when the bill was first proposed, and they didn't go that far on Thursday. They even put out a statement saying it's good that we're making progress in Illinois. So I've thought this forever, that if it's close, the Bears will say tie goes to the base runner and it's going to be Illinois. But I think the question is, can Illinois make it close?
From the start, which, by the way, if you don't remember, the start is almost 5 years ago at this point. The start is May of 2021. OTAs, Halas Hall, Matt Nagy is the coach. Justin Fields is the quarterback.
People are still wearing masks in certain occasions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how long this has been going on. From the start, the most logical option in many ways has been this 326-acre blank canvas in Arlington Heights. Now, along the way, they have said, we're building in Arlington Heights. They have said, we're building in on the lakefront. They have said, we're moving forward with Indiana. And there's been, in between, there's been, I think, Aurora, Naperville, Waukegan.
Iowa. How about Iowa?
I was, like, yelling from the back, can we get in on the game? And I think all throughout that, Arlington Heights has made the most sense. It's just logical that they would go to a blank canvas that they own in the middle of their season ticket holder base, the heart of their season ticket holder base. I think everything else, including when they were moving on the lakefront, is to varying extents leverage. I do think that they would have gone through with the lakefront thing if that had moved quicker and if things had kind of gone in their favor on that. That would have been a legitimate option, whereas I just still don't see Indiana that as anything more than just a way to put pressure on Illinois. Let me add one thing to this. And I want to hear your thoughts on this, actually. You have a pretty good understanding and good relationship, working relationship with George McCaskey. on top of all the other factors, does George McCaskey want to move the team that his grandfather started, that his mother ran for years, out of Illinois to play their home games in Indiana? Does he want to be the link in the chain that does that?
I think in a vacuum he doesn't. I think in a vacuum, though, he'd like to play on the lakefront. And, you know, when they build this stadium, it is going to increase the value of their franchise by $2 to $3 billion with a B dollars. For context, the most expensive baseball team ever sold was the Mets for $2.5 billion with a B dollars. So this is a tremendous gain they would make financially. I don't think he wants to be the one to do it. That's why I think that if, you know, if it's close, they'll say it's a tie and they'll give it to the home team. I also wonder how much money they lost in addition to opportunity cost by playing footsie with the city for as long as Kevin Warren did. Because remember, when Kevin Warren got here, the Bears owned the land, you know, and, you know, he decided to look at the city in part to give them leverage. It didn't really work. I would argue to you that the Indiana thing is working and that it at least got Illinois to start moving in their direction. And the other thing it did in the court of public opinion is, compared to Indiana, Arlington Heights doesn't seem that far away from people's houses, does it? You know, compared to betraying the city of Chicago by going to Arlington Heights, Arlington Heights is a lot more a part of Chicago, I think, in the minds of most Bears fans than any town in Indiana is. And I realize that Northwest Indiana is part of the metro area, and I don't think people nationally get that, which is why I think the story...
They don't. No.
Yeah.
They don't, and they don't understand that the Bears would not be moving their whole operation to Indiana, that they were really just talking about 10 days a year,
right,
plus any playoff games. Yeah. Two of the things I think about it is, one, a byproduct of all of the Indiana stuff is that I think if it ends up in Arlington Heights, people are going to be very forgiving of how long it's taken. There's just going to be this relief that it's not in Indiana, that it's going to be pretty reachable for most of their people that actually attend games in Arlington Heights rather than to be in Northwest Indiana. So that's going to help them too. But also, this process has been chaotic for 5 years almost now, and not all of that is on Kevin Warren. If I tell you, Pat, that an NFL team or any sports, any major pro sports team is going to start a stadium project, do you think it's a good idea if they change team presidents in the middle of that? Or do you think it's better if they hire a team president to start that, to begin that process?
For the record, this is the second time the Bears have done that. The reason Ted Phillips had his job in the first place was because the Bears couldn't get any traction on Soldier Field. And then when they figured that out, the stadium, they decided very quickly after they built or they rebuilt Soldier Field that wasn't good enough for them either. So, yeah, it's not good. It takes a long time to build a stadium, even in a perfect world. I think the Las Vegas A's, did they just break ground? And how long has that been going on? 3 years? I don't know. It was not ideal. I think the concept of bringing Kevin Warren in made a ton of sense. He's the guy who got U.S. Bank Stadium built, and it's my favorite stadium, and I think it's in your top three, probably, right?
Other than SoFi, it's the nicest.
Yeah, but I think that it sure feels like he's been spinning his wheels up until maybe a couple of months ago.
But think how hard it would be, like, if you were going to paint a painting. And I had already started on it. I had already done, like, the first third of it. And I'd be like, hey, Pat, why don't you take over? You'd be like, well, what were you going for here? Like, what color? Hold on, I wouldn't have started with this. I wouldn't have started. It's a lot different than, like, doing it by yourself from the beginning. It would have been so much more logical for the Bears to put that transition in place of hiring a team president for the long haul before they started this process in 2021.
Before they agreed to spend $198 million on 326 acres. Yeah, that's probably true. I also think that there have been some statements. I agree with you, it's not Kevin Warren's fault in its entirety. But Kevin Warren himself has made some statements over the years, you know, more or less that, well, the city's the only place we want to play. And then, okay, now Arlington Heights is the only place we want to play. I think it's hard to believe the Bears as an entity when they make these claims. And then, you know, I mean, 3 times in 22 months, they've said that a different location is the place they want to play football.
It's crazy to be almost 5 years into the overall process, and you can't say for sure what state the stadium we'll be in right now.
We'll be one of two.
Yeah, I know.
We'll see. Like I said, no real progress is going to happen here, at least until the Illinois legislature comes back in the middle of March. Even then, I imagine, take a long time to decide on something, and we'll see how long it is. The Bears want to wait around. The Indiana folks said yesterday that if the Bears said yes, they could get shovels in the ground next April there in Hammond. That would still mean the stadium gets built in what, 31?
Opening in 2030?
Yeah, that's still a long time from when they got started. Jason, I'm sure we will talk about that as the spring wears on, and certainly any sorts of moves the Bears make between now and the start of the league season. Until then, you can follow Jason and myself on social media. Check us out at the Sun-Times website. And if you live in town, buy a newspaper. He's Jason. I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.
This spring, WBEZ presents Patti Smith in conversation with Jeff Tweedy, Ani DeFranco, Patrick Radden Keefe with Gillian Flynn, and more. See the full lineup and register at WBEZ.org/events.